Pensacola Beach, but almost nobody gets to fly with them until now. Climb into a full-scale replica FA-18 Super Hornet cockpit and experience the thrill of flying in the slot position with Blue Angel No. 4. Hi, I'm retired Rear Admiral Kyle Kozed, President and CEO of the National Naval Aviation Museum Foundation. You're cleared for takeoff in the only experience of its kind in the world at the National Naval Aviation Museum. Visit NavalAviationMuseum.org to plan your mission today.
Managing your ECUA service is easier. The new My ECUA mobile app puts everything you need right at your fingertips. From paying your bill, submitting service requests, and reporting issues like missed collections, damaged or lost bins, water main breaks, and sewer overflows, it's all right there in one easy-to-use app. Take control of your services anytime, anywhere. So download My ECUA. It's available in the App Store and Google Play.
Hi, this is Mike Kohler, your District 2 Commissioner seeking re-election. As a retired Navy captain with 33 years of naval service, I'll continue fighting to preserve our communities, manage taxpayer dollars responsibly, and oppose wasteful spending. As your commissioner, you can continue to count on me to be a strong advocate for public safety. I respectfully request your vote. Please vote Mike Kohler on August 18th.
Paid for and approved political ad by Mike Kohler for County Commissioner, Republican District 2.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for Marysville High School outside of Sacramento, California, where we are sad to say the Board of Trustees of Marysville Joint Unified School District have decided to act like little children and push back against Governor Gavin Newsom and the 2024 California Racial Mascot Act. That beautiful piece of legislation explicitly prohibited any schools in the state from using, quote, any derogatory Native American term as a school or athletic team name, mascot, or nickname, end quote. As you probably know, and forgive me for having to say the term out loud, the Marysville Indians, I'm sorry, were the team name and mascot for nearly 100 years. Now, it is true that MHS has complied with the law and stopped using that horrible term and related iconography, but they did so kicking and screaming like petulant toddlers. They have announced that they will not be replacing the name and mascot with anything else, which means there will be an ongoing reminder by omission of what the team was called by not calling them anything. As you know, my young wokelings, it is absolutely crucial as a part of our cultural agenda that offensive names be replaced with ones that are acceptable, at least acceptable at the moment. Without a replacement, the lack of a team name and icon will only serve to remind fans and students of what has been canceled. Like nature, the human imagination hates a vacuum. Moreover, despite complying at the most superficial level, Marysville is actively pursuing an endorsement by any federally recognized Native American tribe so that they can return to using the Indian name and images. Assembly Bill 3074 did specifically allow for this, and they've been knocking on the door of every wigwam they could find for 2 years now, with no takers. Now, obviously, we don't love the fact that any indigenous people would be allowed to degrade themselves by being mascotized by a California school under any circumstances. As always, it's our job to dictate to them what we think is offensive to them and to ban forms of cultural appropriation that offend us, not for them to decide whether they are being offended themselves. However, at least so far, none of them have consented to be degraded in this way. But how sad is it that the leaders of Marysville would be trying so hard to keep oppressing, objectifying, and demeaning any Native Americans just for the sick, twisted purpose of perpetuating white supremacy culture and treating those people as groups of mascots? We certainly wish the school would just voluntarily comply with the spirit of the law and adopt something pleasing and inoffensive to everyone by becoming, for example, the Marysville Flower Children, or the Marysville Water Lilies, or the Marysville Hemps, or the Marysville Pansies, or the Marysville Gentle Huggers, or even maybe the Marysville Little Rays of Sunshine. Why do all these sports identities have to be so fierce and aggressive? Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, we want to highly commend Brazil for their wonderful work to preserve the government monopoly on education and to fight the forces of ignorance and religious anti-intellectualism. Last month, the Sao Paulo Criminal Court ruled against parents Audato and Aida Denardi and sentenced them to 50 days in prison. Their crime? Homeschooling their two daughters without using a state-approved curriculum. After withdrawing their daughters from public school in 2020 during the COVID-19 pandemic, the Donardis began homeschooling their girls and discovered serious inadequacies in what they had been taught at school and subsequently saw their scores improving under home education. However, although the Donardis are both accomplished pianists and speak multiple languages, they also made the rash and wicked decision to not include instruction in, quote, gender and sex education, and also, quote, tolerance and diversity. Now, as you all know, this is a grievous moral sin, to deprive children of their key indoctrination in basic principles of wokeness. Being able to recognize ungrammatical conjugations and errors in long division is nice, but instantly knowing a statement is racist, sexist, ageist, or ableist is absolutely essential. As we always say, it's okay if they can't read and write, as long as they can spell LGBTQIA+++ and DEI. You see, in Brazil, ever since 2019, homeschooling has been in a bit of legal limbo, because although the Supreme Court ruled that homeschooling was not in violation of the country's constitution, it also ordered the national legislature to regulate it, which they have not done. So the court was left with the fact that the Donardis did not use a government-approved curriculum, and they most certainly did not use one which was officially stamped rainbow-inclusive. Moreover, the judge appeared concerned about deprivation of the girls who expressed a preference for classical and religious music over the pop culture trap or sertanejo music, including an aversion for the sexually permissive lyrics it contains. When you add it all up, you can see why the judge convicted them of the crime of intellectual neglect and applied the prison sentence, even despite 3,000 pages of evidence that they had taught the girls every other academic subject and even over the recommendation by the prosecution that they be acquitted. There is still an appeal pending, and the parents have not yet been forced to serve the 50-day sentence, but we certainly hope they will be. And we hope the appellate courts will make an example of them so that all parents who have the audacity to think they can educate their own children according to the dictates of their own conscience or religion will learn their lesson. Perhaps eventually we can reestablish the same level of control over homeschooling here in the United States that we once had and better emulate the wisdom of our dear Brazilian otherin. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, I want to apologize to those of you who thought that my cancellation of the FIFA World Cup 2 weeks ago was hastily or inappropriately formed. Of course, you all understood the great evil of bringing fans here only for them to discover how much better America is than their home nations, including the political danger of seeing what liberty and free enterprise can produce in contrast with the bleak, gray democratic socialism so familiar to Europeans. But since that time, there have been other developments which certainly weigh heavily in favor of realizing the World Cup does have some redeeming wokeness left in it. First, the best news we could have imagined is the fact that the U.S. men's and women's national teams will be evenly splitting their prize winnings, assuming, of course, that the women qualify for the 2027 tournament. This new revenue sharing was decided a few years ago, but it means that the $16 million the men earned for their appearance in the round of 16 will pay each team $6 million. USA Soccer keeps its 20% or $3 million. For a perspective, if the ratios from 2023 hold true next year, the women's round of 16 will only pay $2 million versus the men's $16 million. Even if the women's team manages to become champions, they will only get paid $5 or $6 million compared to the men's champions this year earning $51 million. Since it's unfair and sexist for the men to earn so much more, forcing the teams to split any earnings openly and evenly is a perfect example of socialism and gender equity in practice. FIFA may be sexist, but USA Soccer doesn't have to be. Gender equity go. Second, we were thrilled to see President, we never say his name, personally bully FIFA into letting Phalarim Balogun play for USA in the round of 16 despite having received a red card in the prior match. On the surface, we cherish the man from Mar-a-Lago behaving like a petty tyrant because it validates our never-ending series of No Kings protests. However, a more subtle point here is that FIFA bent the rules for the USA, and we love that, because it helps point out that FIFA bending the rules for us is a way of reinforcing that we do not believe in the rule of law, but in the law of rulers. Our preferred system of government always allows for wise, benevolent rulers of the people to act capriciously, since they're above the law, as has happened in every place that has fully embraced progressivism, or what we used to call communism. As we preach, you must accept that your leaders know more than you do and will make decisions you are too foolish to understand, but simply must obey. Remember, we claim to resist authoritarianism even while we collectively use the mob and cancellation and bullying and reporting other people to force our ways on anyone who dares disagree with us. So when the rules get bent like Beckham, that's a good reminder that the rule makers are the ones who are smart enough to bend them. Third, we especially admire this year's inclusion of the mandatory hydration breaks 22 minutes into each half of play. This fits perfectly into our overarching agenda of making men believe that they are incapable of doing difficult things and treating them like they are children, or, better yet, women. Our entire program of gender anarchy is advanced every time we make men more effeminate and women more masculine. And what could be more effeminate than changing the entire operation of a sport's basic structure just so a few weakling participants can take a drink and feel refreshed? Declaring men to be too stupid to care for themselves physically and forcing them to take it easy because of the heat is a fantastic way to chip away at the toxic masculinity that tells men they should tough it out and push themselves to achieve and take real risks and not act like frail little wussies. When dad says rub some dirt on it and keep playing, he's teaching a boy to be a man. And when mom coddles that same boy and kisses his wound with gentle affection, she's teaching that boy to be a woman. Well, hooray for FIFA for kissing everybody's dehydrated boo-boos and gently smothering them into the curvy mold of modern feminism. The only way they might do a better job of it in 2028 is if they offer penalties for players being mean to each other and add an allotment for emotional injury timeouts. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otheren, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
It's 8:30 here on News Radio 92.3. Quickly, Candy has a traffic break for us. What's going on the roads, Candy?
Everything's fine. Not showing any slowdowns or delays right now. And this is brought to you by Shays Fashions, 3960 Navy Boulevard. Going out of business, blowout sale. Men's, women's, children's, formals, and clothing today and Saturday. Business for sale also. 437-1620 if you have any traffic tips.
News. I'm Gianna Gelosi. Court going to reconvene for the final day of the preliminary hearing for Tyler Robinson, the man accused of killing Charlie Kirk, after yesterday's chilling testimony from Robinson's roommate and lover, Lance Twiggs.
He had said he was planning to go hunting with his family, and he asked me if we had a Dremel, because he said he wanted to engrave messages on bullets, and I just told him where Dremel was.
Prosecutors say one casing said, "Hey, fascist," and others said, "Oh, Bella Chow." A new threat from Iran as talks continue.
Israel now sharing intelligence with D.C., showing that Iran has developed a new plot to assassinate President Trump. And there were numerous banners at the Ayatollah's funeral calling for President Trump's death. Yeah, but still, all this really comes down to the Straits of Hormuz. Iran wants to control it.
Fox's Benjamin Hall. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 8:31 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne, and right now we've got 83 degrees with partly cloudy skies. We'll get a look at our forecast here in just a few minutes. Well, nearly two dozen people showed up to the Santa Rosa County public hearing on Thursday on a proposed data center moratorium. Most of those speakers were arguing that the county should just ban the facilities outright. Chairman Colton Wright wrapped up the hearing by telling the room even if commissioners don't agree on the approach, they're not divided on what they're trying to protect.
And I know not one of us sitting up here wants to do anything to negatively affect our water, hurt our children, drive up electrical rates. None of us want that.
Commission Chairman Colton Wright and County Attorney Tom Danheiser says that going with a year-long moratorium instead of an immediate ban keeps the county on solid legal footing while they build the case for permanent rules. Well, Pensacola residents have until later today to weigh in on the new playground coming to Dunwoody Park.
You can still give some input on Dunwoody Park until July 10th. We had a great turnout and event. Thank you to the Parks and Rec Department, Tanya Bird, Councilman Moore. On July 3rd, there was a great turnout of kids getting to pick which playground they want to replace the playground at Dunwoody Park. And this is part of our Direction 25 is the $200,000 to replace that playground.
Mayor D.C. Reeves, their kids had a chance to check out the options in person on July 3rd. The playground replacement is part of the city's Direction 25 initiative. Again, if you missed that in-person event, you can vote online for the new playground before the end of today. Well, the vice chair of Escambia County's planning board says he wishes he voted a little bit differently on a major land use change in Beulah. The board approved shifting 540 acres, the OLF 8 property, from commercial mixed use to mixed use urban, a change that some people say could favor housing over the promised jobs on
was
the property.
Was I happy with that? No. Would I go back and probably vote with Jonathan Owens? Yes, I would.
That is Vice Chair William Van Horn. He talked with Channel 3, and he says the board had just 1 week to review that proposal before they voted. County commissioners will make the final call. And the Escambia Children's Trust no longer has to pay tax increment financing to either the county or the city. That's a change that'll save them over $1 million this year. But that money was going to be used to help fund the child care access program in the city of Pensacola. The city says they're now evaluating their next steps on that program. Trust Director Lindsay Cannon says it's not yet clear where that extra money will go. And Leon County might be the next in Florida to slow down on data centers. Commissioners meet next week to discuss a moratorium in Leon County as well. Commissioner Christian Caban says he supports that. It is 8:35 here at News Radio, and Candy's got our traffic on the fives.
And the good news is nothing is slowing us down right now. If you see any accidents, 437-1620, you can text him in. Candy with traffic on the fives.
Thank you so much, Candy. Now our Channel 3 weather forecast with Brooke Richardson.
We do have a 30% chance of rain today with temperatures warming up into the 90s, feeling more like the triple digits with that humidity. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 82. For Saturday, 30% chance of rain with mostly sunny skies mixed in, 92 degrees for your high. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 81. Going into Sunday, 60% chance of those showers and thunderstorms, high near 90 degrees. And Sunday night, temperatures dropping near 77. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. We've got 83 degrees, partly cloudy skies. Our next news in 30 minutes and break. Breaking news anytime it happens. And your money now this hour. The markets are up here today at the opening bell. The Dow's up 54 points at 52,541.43. S&P 500 up 11.5 points at 75,53.40. NASDAQ is up 30 and three-quarter points, 26,237.756 today. 10-year bond rate up a bit at 4.553%. Turning to commodities, gold is down 34.90, 41.05.90. Silver is down 1.25%, 76 cents, 59.98. Bitcoin is up just over $1,000 today, 64.212 even. And looking at those always fluctuating oil prices, actually not a huge change today. Oil is up a penny. West Texas Intermediate up a penny at 72.08. Brent crude up 14 cents at 76.44 per barrel. Looking at our gas prices, the national average is up for a gallon of regular today, 3.88. Florida's statewide average also up. It is 3.85 today, up from 3.80 yesterday, 3.81 1 week ago. Local prices seeing averages right about 3.56 in Escambia and 3.63 in Santa Rosa counties. Now, Meta is reportedly violating the European Union's digital laws because Instagram and Facebook have addictive designs. That's according to a preliminary report out today from the European Commission that found the tech company didn't consider the risks when adding features like infinite scrolling, push notifications, and personalized recommendation systems. Federal agents are turning up the heat on the soccer world. According to multiple reports, the FBI has now opened a preliminary financial fraud investigation into the Argentine Football Association, the governing body behind international superstar Lionel Messi. Investigators are working to track down over $300 million in international soccer revenues that were quietly funneled through a network of shell accounts in South Florida. And home sales for the month of June coming in a little bit lower than expected. According to the National Association of Realtors, sales of previously owned homes in June dropped over 2% from May, despite projections of a slight gain month over month. 8:38, our next news at 9 and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
You don't always have time to sit and listen. That's why Pensacola Right Now works the way it does.
Every few minutes, you get the latest local news, traffic on the fives, weather, and updates you actually need. So whether you're in the car for 5 minutes or 50, you're always caught up. Pensacola Right Now with Chris and Austin.
Weekdays 4 to 7
on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Everybody jump! Jump!
I said a hip, hop, the hip, it, hip, 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 hop, you don't stop.
Rap, rap.
I will definitely call you back later, then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big sharp it up.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. It's a chance for me to talk about the events of the week or whatever happens to come up when I get friends in the room with me. And in this case, I have a friend and an almost friend. You guys figure out which one is
which. Oh, wow.
This is what the show's about now. Craig Heinzman, he is the community outreach pastor or something like that at Marcus Point Baptist Church. What's the actual? Say it again.
Community engagement pastor, but whatever.
I don't know why. I can never remember
just
that
term. Just do whatever.
It's like CEO and president and all these, you know,
right.
They don't mean anything different than each other. It's executive
chief,
director.
The chief
it's all
outreach
the same
officer.
Thing.
Officer.
The
I don't know.
Thing. Whatever. Yeah. And so, and also Josh Newby, who is
the friend.
The aforementioned friend.
Yeah.
The executive director.
As a pastor, we're pretty much always kind of a friend, and we understand that.
Aww. Well, you're a friend for hire, you know.
That's exactly right.
As long as the tithes keep coming in.
we're a friend when you need us and when you want to take a vacation. You don't want to talk to us. I get it.
I didn't mean to say that out loud. I love my pastor friends. UWF banner week. Well, it's not brand new news this week, but I think I might have been the first one to report on it, which is weird. But hitting a 92 in their BOG metrics, Board of Governors metrics, first time ever, highest mark they've ever gotten, number two in the entire state university system. Outstanding accomplishment.
Absolutely.
From 10 years ago being in the bottom three.
Yeah.
We all are those people who are here. We know UWF, and if you went to it, you love it. Because you realize it's a quality education.
Did you graduate UWF?
I did.
Okay. So both of you, all right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we understand it. I think people that just live in the community that don't actually have any interaction with UWF, they're like, oh, yeah, it's that local school over here. No, it's an incredible education. It's an incredible school. If your kid goes there and lives here, it's not a, oh, well, you know, you had nowhere else to go. No, I had a.
Right.
Well, then,
I
mean, that's
kid,
how
that
my
kid was the reputation 20 years ago.
Correct, when I came here 13 years ago, that's what I thought of it.
It was a community college.
Yeah, it was a really glorified community college. It was a safety school. It was you can go there and get an okay education if you can't get into UF or
FSU. You 100% expected Joel McHale to be on campus.
That's funny. But now the average expected, you know. Are you actually engaged in a good job a year later? What is your pay a year later? Only UF and Florida Poly are higher on both of those. I mean, like, it's
right,
an incredibly
crazy.
And I have a student who graduated from there, mm-hmm. and another student who's there right now, and it's a fantastic school. And this did not happen by accident.
No, absolutely. No. It's years and years of work. I mean, probably over a decade of work.
Yes.
You know, you move a metric here, and another metric goes down over here. I used to work there, and it's an incredibly it's a small city, right? And you're managing evolving student attitudes. You're managing an evolving curriculum, and it's incredibly complex. I give Martha Saunders a lot of credit for the growth that she did while she was there. I'm a two-time alumnus myself.
And Judy Bentz, I think.
I think Judy Bentz. It started with Judy Bentz. Yeah. I might be honest. Now, Benny Diaz is doing a great job. There's no doubt.
And
the
metrics are all like a year old anyway. Like, the data's a year old. So none of this has any reflection on the current board or Manny Diaz, except for what was before, which they may do great. They may not. We don't know yet. But, Martha Saunders and
Judy Bentz is the one who really kind of kicked that off and started taking the risks. And if you ever hear her talk about it, anytime you can hear Judy Bentz talk about anything, I recommend it.
She's great.
She's great. She took a lot of risks when she stepped into that president's position. And really those risks have now paid off down the line.
And you know, the way I just kind of disconnected for me this morning is when we've been talking for years about the possibility of UWF becoming a D1 school. I always looked at that as I guess we can sort of get in there. We're barely good enough to, you know, we're kind of almost at that point. But if you look at how we're performing on the academic side and you look at how dominant we've been in sports, it's kind of like we've been a D1 school, just not officially. And now a lot of the data and the metrics are really kind of supporting it. It's smaller than you think of as a 50 or 60,000, because only, what, 14, 15,000 people right now. But still, you know, if you add in grad students. But it is a D1 school. And now with us being in the athletics of it, it kind of is the recognition for that. At least I think so.
I can't speak to college sports very much. I will.
Me neither.
I will be honest.
I was in dance choir.
I will be honest. D1 advanced choir.
It wasn't. It was. We were still in the Gulf South League at the time.
And
so yeah.
Josh is envious of your fine athletic prowess because you have any.
That's true. That's true. I will say that it still does not feel what I expected a D1 school to feel like to me.
When you go on campus?
Yeah.
Well, it's because it's still a commuter campus.
Sure. Right. It is sure.
And I think Division I schools are not typically commuter schools.
I mean, typically D1 schools are party schools.
Right.
And they have a culture that is quite different than
they have on-campus activities and malls and stores
and restaurants. I think as we understand UWF, it's changing.
Mm-hmm.
The campus itself, which – for those of us who enjoyed the nature trails, it kind of like that part of UWF, we're going to have to go, all right, a lot of that's going away.
Do you think so?
I don't think it will.
I think they're going to keep a good portion of it, but as the school grows, you there's a footprint in which they're going to have to stay in, and there's some of that stuff is already being taken.
I sure hope that's not true, because that is an amazing amenity.
Some of those nature reserves are preempted by state law.
Right, correct. Yeah. You can't touch that anyway.
But the wooded campus – With large buildings, Pizza Hut dorms, that stuff's gone away. You're now building tall buildings,
right.
compacted campuses. We're going to start seeing fraternity houses, and we're going to start in these surrounding areas. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It can be if mismanaged and not done properly, but that is part of going D1. I'm glad that our athletic programs are going to have some challenges, because it does seem like
You could go to
UWF football games and you're like, well, this was not really that fun to watch as a game, because we just, completely slapped them. And you want that. And so
are we going to be completely slapped now, though?
First D1 sporting event, as I understand it, is December 13th, and it is a basketball game against Navy. So UWF versus Navy. And they're trying to make it like an actual,
like a big
year-round annual rivalry thing, because we are,
because we're Navy town.
We're talking about Navy Days is talking about coming in with that and making like a Cradle Cup or whatever. I don't know.
Kind of like that. All
but right. That's gonna be. I don't know how we would fare on that game. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah,
that's a big.
That is.
You talk
we have
about
a very
Navy
good basketball
versus
team, but
some of these other
sure.
schools. That's a big game.
You talked about fraternities. I mean, there's a very thriving Greek system, and it's weird to have a Greek system without the houses, right? I mean, like, that's an unusual scenario, especially for those of us who went to, larger institutions. That's not how it is. We'll come back to this in a second, because I want to switch gears a little bit, but still stick up with UWF. Candy has traffic on the fives.
This is brought to you by Knox Pest Control. Their family serving your family since 1929. For more info and a free pest or termite quote, visit KnoxPest.com. That's KNOX. Knox knocks them out. Not showing any slowdowns or delays. Looks like everything's running smoothly. 437-1620. If you see that accident or slowdown, you can text in. It's Candy with traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, Candy. Back to UWF, a slightly different slice of the issue, the logo change. Now, I had to do a correction apology, because I had thought they were getting rid of all of the argy, the helmet, the sword, all of that stuff, and that is not true. I was corrected on that, thank goodness, by the UWF comms people. But the Nautilus is going away. It has gone away. It has been replaced by the UWF lettering with the Seattle Seahawks colors, the forest green and the dark blue, navy blue. It's going to stay on the revised presidential seal, I'm told, but that's also going to go through a change. People have strong opinions, and I want to hear yours, because I know you do, if you're willing to share them. We love UWF.
We love UWF. Have
that's part of why
of
we care.
To work at UWF.
Two degrees here and two relatives and all that.
Three degrees, Andrew.
We're legacy, so we've got my daughter that just graduated,
I love the colors. I have always loved the green and blue.
The dark green and dark blue.
I'm a big fan of the colors. They look great on me as a person with a pale complexion.
So
for that reason, I really champion the
like
green
the
and the blue.
Versus the blue. I like the teal versus the blue.
Okay, well, not everyone can be tan, Craig.
I'm not tan.
Well, you're tanner than
white,
me.
I'm a white man. very white.
I don't like text-based logos. I will say that. And I especially don't like when those text-based logos have an athletic inflection to them. Now, I did not like the Nautilus. I worked there for a very long time after college, and the Nautilus was a big inside joke. Nobody liked the Nautilus. Everybody called it something different.
What did you say, Craig?
Fighting snails.
The UWF fighting snails?
Yes, that's what we. That's how we always said it when I was there.
It was very hard to emboss on clothing. It just did not work well on a piece of clothing. But
if you're running around in, you know, some other state with a giant Nautilus on your hat,
right?
Nobody's gonna
correct.
It doesn't embody fear and intimidation.
Fighting snails. I'm sorry, I can't get over that.
But I do wish that.
But some people are very attached to the Nautilus. I was not, but
I have found out.
Well, some people. All right, fair enough.
They are entitled to their wrong opinions.
I was directly told that no, the loss of the Nautilus was a big deal to a lot of people.
It's a huge deal to my wife. I mean, she worked there as well, and she's just like, "You can't take the Nautilus away." And I was like, "You can do whatever you want," but yeah. I think it's supposedly staying in high academics. That's the idea, is that you'll see it in high academic fields, but you won't see it
like
anywhere
graduate
else. I don't think it's
research.
Coming off of the actual, like, I don't know that they're removing it off of the
stones. Which one, the Nautilus?
Yeah.
No, there are going to be some areas of campus, but yeah, the and it'll be on the presidential seal, apparently.
You're right.
But that's it.
But yeah, it's not going to be like the sign at the entrance is no longer.
It's not
gonna
a front-facing component.
No. What about the little serifs, the flares, the arrows on the left side of the U?
So I was looking at the. I'm not a fan of this logo at all.
For people who, I feel sorry because people don't, may not have seen it, and so it's hard to tell.
It's hard to describe.
But there
seem to be some counterintuitive notches at various points of the serif on the U and on the F. And Facebook, the UWF Facebook team put out an explainer, whom I love, put out an explainer of what those notches mean. And I appreciate
what do they say? I appreciate an underlying philosophy.
Strength, strategy.
I just fell asleep during your explanation.
Here's the thing, the old, so
I went back and looked again because I was making sure that I was correcting this. The old logo has them too.
Yeah.
The notches on all three letters.
Yeah,
the
left side of the U, the W, and the F has it, yeah.
And I look at it just from an actual, just looking at it and going, why do we have it on just one letter? It's either one or none. So it just seems odd to have it in this one little location.
Let me interrupt.
Look, you people hate change, and nothing we change will ever make you happy.
People did this. People raised this same Michigas with the City of Pensacola logo.
Suddenly, everybody's an art critic. I like that too. Everybody's a graphic designer.
Oh, just have AI do it. Just have an art student do it.
Didn't the City of Pensacola do it locally and UWF did it out of Tallahassee, right?
Oh, I don't know about that.
I just want to say that
no matter what you made it, it is not going to please everybody.
That is very true.
I think it is a fine logo. Would I have preferred something not text-based? Would I have preferred something non-athletic? Sure. But suddenly everybody's a critic. And the team, they consulted alumni.
What's wrong with you?
I'm trying to bring some sobriety to this conversation.
Wow. Oh. Michigas, sobriety.
Let's appreciate.
It's not that, like you said, it's not that I have definite design issues with it. I have some issues with the fact that there are people here in Pensacola that probably could have done some stuff with it. But I love intentionality in the City of Pensacola logo. If you look at the splash, and I get people
and you look
like,
at their big
the
explanation of all the different elements
I like
of
the
it.
That was when the moment that explanation came out, I literally texted the team and said, this was one of the best logo design pieces because of how you've explained all these. And now I see it everywhere.
Yeah.
I see it where I go places.
I agree with that. Let's switch gears a little bit and drive to Alabama on the $8 each way toll when the I-10 Bayway gets redone. At now a price tag of $3.2 billion, this was always going to be a toll road, they told us, and I tried my hardest to make that not happen, but I have completely failed. But, you know, they said it was going to be $4 each way. And now if you buy the monthly pass, it'll be cheaper. You know,
which
I think they're talking about $60.
$4 each way. I mean,
$8 to round trip to Mobile. So, yes. But it's going to be $7.70 is the price they're saying now. Who knows what it will actually be. The price has doubled from $2 to $3.2 billion. And you're going to have a toll road in order to get through from Tallahassee to Dallas on I-10. That's crazy to me.
What's going to end up happening, like you said, is the causeway is going to become
everybody's going to take the free causeway.
Insane.
Unless there's been a flooding event or whatever.
And that's what sometimes people don't understand. I'm trying to figure out how people that do this for a living go, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to pay for it in this way. And I don't see any repercussions on the side roads or the off. Because right. Waze is going to tell me when the traffic can take me somewhere else off.
Right.
So now all of a sudden you're going to overcrowd these other areas.
I mean, I think even Lillian Highway, people will adapt their routines around this because, you know, they'll go a different way. Ways that are maybe not the best already, and now they're just going to be extra crowded because people aren't going to want to pay
this. You know what the Verrazano Bridge, going into New York, you know what the Verrazano Bridge toll is?
No, I don't.
$7.46.
Oh, wow.
It's cheaper than this is going to be.
Yes.
Wow. All right.
Would you rather go to Mobile
but have or you New heard York of, City? But have you heard of the Explorium? Okay.
The Gulfarium.
The Gulfarium? No, other direction.
You don't know the Gulfarium?
That's the other direction in Panama City.
No, I'm saying in Mobile, the Gulfarium is...
I didn't know they had a Gulfarium.
Is there a Gulfarium in Mobile?
There's the... it's made like a giant ship.
Oh, well, now you're... All right.
It's a kind of a cool thing.
That 770
I think that's what it's called.
I'm
going on memory if that's what it's called.
We have a Costco, so we don't have to go there anymore.
That's true.
I'm looking it up right now because I may be calling it the wrong thing after all these years. Candy's got traffic on the fives.
I'm just looking at the Gulfarium.
The Maritime Museum. I think that. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh,
is there
any
traffic, Candy?
No, thank you, Pastor Craig. And we're good. 437-1620 if you see that accident or slowdown, or if you want to weigh in. I'm Candy with traffic.
Don't
call
the Explorium.
That's
what
I said. That was the joke I made. Andrew, you never listened to me.
Wow. Well,
someone's
off his game today.
Maybe you should try being an actual friend.
No, I do think that's that's going to change so much. It's going to change so much for people from coming here over there. You're just going to stop at the Buc-ee's.
Yeah,
Spanish for it. You're not going past it.
It is a behavior modifying amount
of
money.
That is a lot of money for the average commuter if they do commute. I think that's a big deal. Scammy Children's Trust, finally, they get to keep all their money. This is, you know.
Good.
I mean, this is what it was meant to be. The politicians who said otherwise, I think, were wrong, dramatically wrong. It's TBD, I think, whether they're going to keep doing the programs they'd already agreed to do. Now they don't have to. You know, the city programs and the county, like the youth employment program, now they don't have to do it that way. Right. There's going to be an interesting question of, you know, whether they do continue to fund those things or not.
I kind of hope they do. You know, I sit on their grant review board, and there's a lot of people who hate the Children's Trust, I think it would go a long way toward engendering goodwill, not only among the political class, but also among the people who benefit from those programs.
It's a little, these are my toys, I'm going home over them if they cut those programs.
Sure, but Lindsay,
I know,
Lindsay
she's
is a highly
smart.
Ethical
yeah,
person.
She's,
I don't
finding,
think she would do that.
Finding the, I think what you do now is you take away the restrictions of you must do these things.
Right.
And now let's do the things that work.
Exactly.
The best.
Exactly.
And if you can tell me if this thing that we've been funding works the best, then we're going to keep doing this thing because it works. But if it doesn't work, now we can put that time, effort, energy into something else.
And I kind of like the two-tier system they've adopted recently, the 50 grand versus 300 grand. The, you know, let's try some things, and if they don't work, okay, we only put 50 into it, and let's the thing.
Which is great.
Yeah, I love that. I love that two-tier system. How much do you credit the Children's Trust for the improved school grades? Any, all, a little, not, I mean, what's,
it's hard to prove causality here, but I would give them
some
credit, a quarter,
it hasn't hurt.
25% of the credit or something like that. Yeah, because there are these downstream effects too that are, again, impossible to quantify, but you cannot say that providing reputable and educational after-school care, for example, does
or
not
preschool preparation
have
or whatever.
A downstream effect on those kids' grades. Well,
They have some effect for certain, as do a number of different organizations that have helped create this, and the school board, sure, and the teachers that
and
work.
The community schools approach, sure, which has worked very well at Weiss, and I think will work at the other schools they're expanding.
Oh, Weiss's, yeah, but it's been great.
Yes,
but having my daughter just taught for a year at Lipscomb Elementary, and just being in the environment and knowing that there are a lot of hardworking teachers that help make that happen.
Yep.
And I think sometimes we want to say it's the system, and yes, the system is important, but if the cogs in the system aren't doing the job and aren't really have the heart, man, some of our teachers have really stepped it up to help those kids this year.
We got a minute, literally not even a minute left. Ooh. But Toy Story 5, I have not seen it, but both of you have.
Redeems the franchise.
Really?
It's incredible. And, you know, when I was a kid, imagination and friendship was my tech, tablet.
Yeah.
And playing and socializing and looking at human faces.
Manipulating things in the real world.
So important for child's development. And this movie really takes a nuanced approach toward that.
Is it at all weird that Disney put out a movie that critiques the use of tablets, which is probably the primary way that most kids are going to watch the movie?
No, because they want you to take your
that
friends.
That was my joke,
they
Andrew.
Want you to take your friends to Disneyland.
I just wanted to say it right, Josh.
Oh, my God.
I did steal Josh's commentary.
Go out and play.
Play with
your
things
friends.
In the real world. Tinker Toys, Lincoln Logs,
make
Legos.
Your kids touch grass.
There
make
you go. Touch grass, no batteries.
Touch grass.